Yeah, Nintendo will fuck you up
real hard. Don't steal their shit.
Sometimes I think maybe our conversations before we start recording should be a part of recording. We get little snippets here and there sometimes.
Every now and then, yeah.
Hello.
Woo!
And welcome to New Day, New Movie,
where we watch 365 movies in 365 days.
It's week 14.
It is week 14, and it's a week that's not themed.
No
after theme the last week. Like 3 weeks have been no kind of themed.
Oh, I'm Scott.
And I'm Mitch. And what's this up? Is the NDNM podcast.
We'll get that one day.
Intros.
Yeah. Intros, outros, the middle.
All of the all stuff. Of it. Life and podcasts are a process.
Especially after 14 weeks.
Ooh.
14 weeks.
Yeah.
This is going to be a tough week for me.
Yeah, we have an interesting lineup of movies.
It's not the movies, though. I think it was just, it was a really long week, like mentally, I think, for me. And just going back to finish up some notes, I really don't remember much of most of the movies.
Like, I remember I was there. And I watched them.
Some of them really seem like weeks ago. I mean, I know we've said that before, but this week for me is definitely the worst. So I mean.
No, I hear what you're saying. I agree that as we push forward more in this process, things are getting harder, I feel like. Like, we're in a groove. We're watching movies every day. That's not the problem of watching a movie every day.
Yeah.
It's just life is getting busier. Just trying to manage all of the things and keep everything, I don't know, like in our minds.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to just like pick and choose what you want up there. And sometimes the movies don't make the cut.
And you're like, right. Oh, well. That's how this week was, I think. Yeah. It's like, I didn't have room for this movie. It seems like this was definitely one of those, you know, those weeks where you're just kind of going through the motions and you remember how the week started. And you kind of remember how it ended just because it just happened.
And there's a big blur. But
the middle is just like, that was a week. Yeah, I guess. Time passed. I'm not really sure. Not really sure what the fuck happened there. But anyway, interesting week. We had our first 2022 movie this week.
Woo!
Good theater experience.
Yeah, actually, it was nice to be back to the theater. I feel like it's been like a month or something since we've seen a theater movie. Just because I was sick for a little bit, holiday stuff, starting back at work.
It just been able to get out.
Weren't really able to schedule it in, but saw that Dolby movie.
Yeah, Scream in Dolby.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was nice. But the movies of the week, or unless you have more to say, I don't know what to say.
I was essentially saying what you're going to say. So speaking of the movies of the week, here's the list.
Can't you tell how high energy we are today?
No, it'll be fine. We'll pick it up. We'll pick it up.
Yeah, once we start talking, I feel like we'll be good. Movies of the week. Monday, Scream. Starting our week off with a theater movie was pretty good.
It was nice.
Kind of liked it. Nobody goes to the movie Monday night. It was pretty empty.
And if you're listening now,
don't
keep
start.
It that way.
Yeah, don't start going. You don't want to have a problem, do you?
Let us have our theater experience.
Have a problem. So Scream on Monday. Prisoners of Ghostland on Tuesday. If you know what that is, you know why I'm laughing. It Comes at Night on Wednesday. The Curse of La Llorona on Thursday. And that's how the guy says it in the trailer. I don't know if you've ever seen the trailer. The Curse of La Llorona. Silence on Friday.
Yeah.
The Man Who Killed Don Quixote on Saturday. And Encanto on Sunday.
So really quick, you mentioned trailers.
Yeah.
I need to start watching those. I need to know what I'm getting into for some of these.
Do you though?
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Either way, I go in blind a lot, so it's always a surprise, which I guess like nothing's skewed my opinions on things because of...
Well, we have talked in the past episodes that you have expected one thing, and so that kind of made you...
upset.
Yeah, I don't remember what movie, but I feel like a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sure.
There was a scenario where you're like, I should start looking into these movies.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like I keep saying it, and yet I still don't do it.
We got to watch the movie either way, so who really cares if you know what it is or not, right?
Guess
I mean,
so.
We pick most of them because we want to watch them. But I suppose...
But how do I know I want to watch them if I know nothing about them?
I suppose...
That is the question of the day, though, folks.
I suppose the last couple weeks have been movies that I have put on the list, confirmed with you, and you're just like, yeah.
Do it.
Whatever.
Do it.
Sounds good to me. But...
Monday. Start us off, buddy.
Ah! That was... terrible scream. Sorry. I don't want to do a too loud of a high pitch. I don't want to clip audio here.
I don't know. You got that high, dude.
Anyway, I just tightened my pants real quick. Oh, fuck. Monday, Scream. 25 years after the original series of murders in Woodsboro, a new ghost face emerges. And Sydney Prescott must return to uncover the truth.
And she's Sydney fucking Prescott. Of course she has a gun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm surprised you remember actual quotes. That was way too long ago.
So, interesting enough, I had a small conversation with a student today about this movie.
Oh?
He said, hey, mister, have you seen that new Scream movie? I have. And he's like, yeah, I didn't really like it that much. So, we started getting into it, kind of talking about it. And I feel like what he didn't like about it is what I really liked about it. It was very self-aware of what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fallen into this pattern that we've seen in the past like couple years of sequels and reboots, or as this movie calls them, requels, because you have to be fan servicey enough to the originals while also trying to create a new story, but you don't want to forget where you came from, so we throw in a bunch of characters from the originals and we're like, oh, remember that guy?
Following the rules that the original set up for the world.
Yeah. So I liked that it was self-aware of itself and it was willing to make fun of the fact of all of these other movies that are doing it. And I think like Matrix last week was probably my most prime example of this.
Yeah. I think I would have liked this even more. I enjoyed it. I'll start with that. I enjoyed this movie. I was surprised I enjoyed it because I feel like it's going to get old fast. So let me explain. I think I would have liked this more if we didn't just watch last week's multiple movies last week, The Matrix being the biggest one. But I just see a trend coming.
I feel like we're in the trend though.
Well, yeah, it's begun. And it's just Hollywood talking shit about their own movies while making...
movies.
The exact movie that they're making fun of. But after Don't Look Up last week telling us not to care so much about celebrities while throwing an ass load of celebrities at us, and The Matrix being a sequel making fun of sequel culture, like, I don't know, it was close to being another one of those. And mark my words, I feel like there's going to be too many fucking movies this year. That's going to be 2022's defining feature is going to be meta movies making fun of themselves. And it's going to get really fucking old. I just feel it. But everybody's going to make an extremely overtly meta movie about itself.
I don't remember which one it is. And I'm sure once we get there. No, it's even our next movie. I think our next movie even falls into that meta making fun of itself type mentality, and we'll talk about it with Prisoners of Ghostland. But I don't know, this did it in more of a comical way.
It worked
way.
For me here. Yeah, it did, and work for me here,
I think.
Which again, makes me feel like maybe they're making fun of me a little.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it was weird because they were self-aware of what they were doing, and they addressed more than just like the movie itself. Like, they even talked about the culture or even the impact that the movie had, which is why they were talking about the fans even in the film itself with their Stab series, right? And relating it to, well, you know, Stab was a lot of people's first horror movie, and it doesn't get the appreciation that others get, like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I actually started thinking about it, and I was like, I think this might have been my first horror movie.
Close for me, too, yeah.
Because the original Scream came out in, what, 97 or 98? 96, holy shit. Yeah, I watched this when I was 3. Actually, that's not too far off. I think the first rated R movie I saw was when I was 4, and it was Species.
Mm.
Just me and Kate went digging through the VHS list. We found a movie that looked cool, and threw it in. We were watching it. I turned out fine, though, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, mine was probably around the same age, and I think it was Face Off, so.
But what I'm trying to say, though, I think the first horror movie I remember, I would say, would be Scream.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This one was nice. I think it had a good balance of callbacks to the original while also trying to create the new world.
And I thought it was clever, the fact how they tied it all in, of the two killers being grumpy Redditors.
Yeah.
That didn't like Scream 4.
Stab 4.
The last stab, which is a parallel to the people who didn't like Scream 4, which was... they kept saying was...
well, actually, if you remember in the video, they had all the way up through Stab 8, mm-hmm. and they were complaining about Stab 8. And I am almost thinking that that is a direct call out to the 8th Star Wars movie.
Possibly.
I think there was so much hate around The Last Jedi, but probably all of the new trilogy anyways, and that kind of, I don't know, started a new phase of this.
You could relate it to all these recent trends of sequels and stuff.
Yes.
But
I'm just saying there was at least 8 Stab movies in that universe of Scream.
Sure.
And the new Scream had a flamethrower knife that he was using.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I read in an article that flamethrower Scream was actually Matthew Lillard.
Really?
Yeah. Who was one of the original killers in Scream, and that was his cameo in the movie. And then Hayden Panettiere, who didn't mm-hmm. make an appearance, her voice was kind of throughout the film. Like, she was the principal on the intercom in the very beginning.
Oh, really?
She had a small little part too, without like actually...
See, that's what I think set this apart from The Matrix, is some of the things that were in it just felt like they came from love and humor, not from... And again, it's all how you frame this stuff, right? Because you could speculate on what the attitude was behind the story of... we're not going to get back into the Matrix discussion, but like this one did feel less... it didn't feel like
they weren't trying to be as...
it was snarky. It didn't feel like it was... it felt like... it felt more genuine, I guess. I don't know.
Like I said, I think there's a large appreciation for the Scream franchise, at least from a certain fan base, right? Because other people might not even associate it with the level of other horror films, which is one of the comments that was made in the film. But also, you know, because of that appreciation, as well as I think almost the push from maybe even the studio to just have to do another Scream movie.
Yeah.
I think that's where like it worked well, was, all right, fine, you're going to make us do another one. We're just going to shit on this entire culture of sequels and reboots and all of this stuff, while also pretty much just doing the same storyline as the original Scream,
while
down
to
the T.
Back to the original.
Yeah.
But also making the motivation, like, that's what made everything
good at the end.
Fun,
is that it's just
that it was like
some angry people behind their computer on Reddit getting fucking fumed.
It's just something about it just made it. It was fun to watch. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, it was a good one. I liked it, and I've talked to a few people who I had mentioned it previously that mm-hmm. I saw it, and they're like, "Oh, what'd you think?" I was like, "Oh, I enjoyed it," and then they went and saw it, and they came back, and they're like, "I didn't like that movie," which is fine. Like, I think, again, I think if you take it for the self-awareness of itself and what it was trying to do, it was fun. I liked it. It was a refreshing take on this new requel mentality.
But was it
that
refreshing?
We're in?
I don't know. It's hard to.
I haven't been to
so
a movie
much
though.
Swimming
that
in my brain that I can't keep it all straight.
I would
like,
just
I have
say
so much more beyond the movies to try and decide whether this is a newer thing or it's been going on longer than it just seems like a trend, just because we're experiencing it. So, you know, the pigeonhole effect kind of thing. But
I mean, I think back to the movies that follow this same guideline, and I don't know if I liked most of them, whereas this one I came out liking it. So I think that's why I'm like, it was a refreshing take, but maybe
something about it.
I just hit my breaking point, and now I just accepted it.
It felt goofy and fun and whatever. Like, it's a fucking Scream movie.
It is a Scream
movie. But, you know, also to say that is hypocritical of, I'm sure, shit that we've said about other movies that attempted to do the same thing. I don't know what sets this apart, I guess, is what I've been trying to figure out all week and haven't been able to this
I think
week.
My closest association with this one, and maybe you could back me up here, but I think Halloween that came out in 2018 is the closest I would think of how this movie felt. Again, that wasn't self-aware of what it was doing, but it followed the same guidelines of trying to stay true to the originals and be fan service-y. And it's not necessarily a reboot because it's in the future, just like this one's in the future, but it's also trying to tell a new story even though you don't have new character. I don't know. But again, I liked Halloween. I hated Halloween Kills.
I guess there's a fine line. I mean, because that's what I was about to say is with, because Halloween was pretty fan service-y, I guess, but it seemed like a solid new, if they're going to make, and that's all the perspective of a lot of these is like, if they're going to make it, which they're going to make it, mm-hmm. we can't control that, right? Because in a, maybe in to some people, maybe to me, in an ideal world, they would just leave well enough alone
yeah.
and do something else. But that's not going to happen, right? They're going to make their money, and that's fine. So if they're going to have a new Scream movie, I enjoyed this one. If they're going to make a new, but that's the thing is, with Halloween 2018, that seemed like the best new Halloween movie we probably could have gotten, right? But then they took it a step further for Halloween Kills, and it was too far, and it was terrible. You know what I mean?
I just don't know how you can be so far off from Halloween to Halloween Kills. But I think we discussed it, right? And we don't need to rehash old conversations. No. But again, I just think it seems like a cash grab, I think, is my mentality.
Well, that's what,
yeah, they could have easily been two movies, you know? And I, like we talked about, you know, it just seems like, let's take this small plot point that could be in a sequel film and expand it to its own film so that we can make more money. And I don't really know what the future of the Scream franchise is. I don't know if there is a plan to do more down the road.
I'm sure they will.
It'll
never stop.
I think something that kind of set this one apart was they were willing to kill, you know, one of the main cast members.
Yeah.
Right? So it seems like
I'm sure David Arquette was like, I'm fine, I'll do this one, but I'm fucking done.
Dude, what a... God, that poor guy. He had to, like, rehash his real-life relationship in a movie. And I was just, like, method acting at its finest, I guess. Yeah, well.
Oh, man.
Moment of silence for you? Yeah. Okay, thank you. All right. Moving into Tuesday.
Oh, God.
Prisoner of the Ghostland. Ghostland? Ghostland?
Prisoner or prisoners?
I have prisoner.
I'm genuinely asking, just for a friend.
For a friend?
Yeah, you. So you can
read. Prisoners. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Prisoners of the Ghostland. I don't care.
Ghostland?
Ghostland, yeah.
The fuck are you saying?
Prisoners of the Ghostland. Is that better for you? It's one word. It doesn't ring off the tongue. It's not like...
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yes. Spider-Man's. Fine. Prisoner of the Ghost Land.
Prisoners.
Okay. Fuck.
I'm leaving all of this in. This is our night.
All right. Prisoners of the Ghost Land. Set in the treacherous frontier city of Samurai Town, where a ruthless bank robber is sprung from jail by wealthy warlord, the Governor, whose adopted granddaughter Bernice has gone missing, the Governor offers the prisoner his freedom in exchange for retrieving the runaway. Strapped into a leather suit that will self-destruct within 3 days, the bandit sets off on a journey to find the young woman and his own path to redemption. So right at the beginning of this film, Nick Cage ditches a car for a bicycle. And I was like thinking to myself, I was like, guess you can't trust Toyotas. And then like 1 minute later, he's back in the Toyota. And I was like, fuck, they got me. And then I was like, never mind. Cause 2 minutes later, the car broke down. I was like, can't trust Toyotas. But either way, he was cool as fuck on that bike. Sorry. I had to get that out. Has nothing to do with the story, but...
What the fuck?
Do you remember the scene I'm talking about?
Of course I remember the scene you're talking about.
Of course.
He peels out, then stops, gets out the car, runs to a bike, gets on the bike, drives away, and then they have the one like right-hand man of the bad guy drive him the car, stop in front of him, and tell him to get back in the car, and he does and drives it. It's like all for... I didn't get it.
I don't know.
Yes, we watched another Nick Cage movie.
A 2021 Nick Cage movie.
We just had a Nick Cage week and a 2021 week, and only Tuesday of this week did we spit in the face of those 2 weeks and watched another 2021 movie with Nick Cage in it.
Yeah. I think this was more about, number one, just what you had kind of shown me from the trailer.
I showed Mitch the trailer, and he was like, we need to fucking watch this week. I can't wait. Like, I can't wait a few weeks to give some space to the Nick Cage 2021s.
But also, I think he was in interviews saying this was, like, his most outrageous or craziest role. So how can you not...
That's a quote in the trailer.
Yeah, how can you not go and watch this movie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's more to this movie. I don't know, man. I liked it, but I don't know.
So do you want me to get into the deeper stuff or just some of the things I mentioned as I was watching the film first?
What do you mean by deeper stuff? Because I was going to talk about the director. Do you have anything to say about the director?
I don't have anything about the director.
Okay, so let me talk about the director briefly.
I did some research on him. Yes.
Okay. Because this is... So Shion Sono is a Japanese filmmaker, and he directed this movie, and apparently he is known as the most subversive filmmaker working in Japanese cinema today. And this was his first English language film. And a lot of the reviews I saw said that this did not live up to his other well-known films.
A lot
of people were hyped for him and the Nick Cage pairing because it should have been fireworks.
Yeah, I read a lot of that too. Even some people going as far as to say that they wouldn't watch his other works, but people are like, don't make your assumptions off of this director based off of this movie.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking the opposite. I don't know how anyone could read that and not be like, oh, I'm not going to watch any of this shit. I'm fucking curious as hell.
Oh.
I'm totally adding all of the movies that I find of him that we can get our hands on to our list, and I think we will be visiting those very soon because they have struck my interest.
Yeah, this was like a Western mixed with Mad Max and
great.
Wizard of Oz. And
it was fucking great. It was just... The idea was so great.
So as I was saying, right, the deeper stuff that I was trying to mention.
Do it.
I feel there's a lot of metaphorical stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be interpreted. And I kind of started down the rabbit hole a little bit, kind of reading up on the director. I mean, essentially, you could look at this movie and kind of discuss how it's like a metaphor for Hollywood, America, China. I got the very, like, I got that Band of China episode from South Park vibes where Randy goes over and, you know, censorship. And again, you could really read into a lot of things if you wanted to. And talking about how American films are, you know, either changing or adapting so that, because again, everything's about profits, right? So if you can't sell your movies in China,
there's Marvel. Excuse me. I said,
not only Nintendo's coming after us, but also Marvel, Disney.
We are canceled. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
No.
Right. So, I mean, if you wanted to look into it that way,
sure.
You could.
Sure.
And I didn't go too far down the rabbit hole. I kind of jumped in and then got scared and I ran out. If I'm being real.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, yeah, we could definitely go down this path if we want to. But sticking to actually just the movie, it was pretty crazy.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It was a crazy movie.
There was a lot going on. And I really had no fucking clue what was happening ever. But it just kept going. And I liked it.
Yeah.
And I was so curious.
It was just like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
It was insane.
I never thought I would see a little explosive device, go off and blow up Nick Cage's testicle and then see him holding his own testicle.
Yeah.
And then later his arm got blown off and then it shows him with the modified sword arm.
Yeah.
So I was like, what did they do to his testicle then? That was the type of thoughts I was having in this movie, Scott. I was like, if they did that much with his arm.
It's a fucking sword, dude.
Yeah, that's, fucking sword arm. You
didn't
arm.
See that scene at the end where he whipped it around and chopped that guy's throat?
No,
his,
I did.
With his testicle sword?
No, I must have missed it. All right.
No, that didn't
happen. We need a rewatch.
I would rewatch this.
Yeah, this
just to see.
I don't know if I would understand anymore watching it again.
Yeah.
Because I still am trying to fathom what even the fuck anything was in that movie.
I just love the vibe.
Yeah,
the vibes. It was like weird. You said, such a weird mashup of genres that just was like, I just want to see more Mad Max Western.
Wizard of Oz. Yeah. With an eternal, like, doomsday clock that's samurai. Actual, real, and... Yeah, samurai. How did we forget?
Yeah.
Yasujiro, who was one of the samurais in this film, he was, like, a fucking straight-up badass. Him and Nick Cage could have been friends, bro.
I know, I didn't get the whole...
Like, they, like...
I think it was him, like, just doing what he needed to do, so he had to fight him. It was just so weird how they kept going back and forth where... I mean, it was also cool that they were both, like, those were the two forces on the battlegrounds, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't matter who else would come in, they were killing everyone around each other and trying to kill themselves.
Trying to kill each other.
It didn't matter that, like, all the other guys were technically on Yasujiro's side.
Yeah, he was just trying to kill Nick Cage.
He was just trying to get to Nick Cage. So he just
and then in the middle
anyway.
Of the fight, they, like, both kick each other in the nuts. So, like, they take a second to, like, okay. Yeah. Just give me a moment. Give me a moment. We'll fight.
It was a very respectful
fight. We'll fight in just a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, until he had to cross Nick Cage, though, and he died for it, which made me very sad.
Yeah.
Because I was like, dude, cool you guy. Seem like a cool dude. Yeah, exactly, right?
It's true.
The guys that were in, like, the Mad Max kind of junkyard with the wings kind of gave me those.
Oh, the Raven guys or Crow guys or whatever they were.
Yeah, they kind of reminded me of like the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Because they kind of slunched over a little bit.
Could you understand
anything? I had to put subtitles on so I could hear.
I didn't even understand what they were saying when they put subtitles on.
That might be pretty good.
Wait, no. Sure. There was no subtitles. How did you get subtitles on AMC Plus?
I did not watch this on AMC Plus. This was on Shudder, and I'm still paying for it.
No shit. Okay, that's actually rerouting where I thought we were going with the conversation. Yeah. So actually, that was why I remembered I wanted to say something about that, because I would have put subtitles on. But I think most of this movie, I didn't understand half of the shit that was saying, not because how they were speaking or anything, just like the sound for my little soundbar just wasn't. They weren't meshing. They weren't gelling. And I think
there was
no way to put on fucking subtitles on AMC Plus. What the fuck, AMC Plus? You're a piece of shit. All right, moving
on. I'm so glad that you finally have a frustration with the streaming service. It's usually me.
I have them. I just, like, I set my bar pretty low, but that's low, right? I mean, and AMC Plus is pulling a lot of content from other places that they're really trying to get off the ground. And their app is garbage. Their UI online even is garbage. They're like, how do you not have a way to put subtitles on?
I don't remember why I didn't watch this on AMC Plus, though. Something happened to where it wasn't cooperating with me.
Mm.
So I just researched where can I watch this movie.
And you found out. Whoa, that's one of the things. Shudder is included in AMC Plus.
That's why.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, I ended up finding it on, found it on Shudder, and I was like, oh, I'm still paying for this.
Yeah, so I think technically this was on Shudder, but you could access it through
it. Because it did say exclusively to Shudder. Okay. Yeah. Final note on the movie. It was great. I was confused, and I was even more confused that at the end of the movie, the suit that blew up Nick Cage's testicle, he continued to wear.
Did he?
Yeah, he was just wearing it. Like, it was his everyday outfit.
Did you see that part where he was in the wheelbarrow when they're pulling him into the town, and he like looks up and you can clearly see that the lock around his neck is completely separated?
Did you see the part where it's like right as they're about to march to go face the bad like the prisoners that were blown up in the atomic bomb. Like, he puts on his helmet, he walks forward like 20 yards and then takes off his helmet.
No.
Yeah, it made no sense. Here's the thing that blew my mind about this movie, and then I'll be done. Nick Cage was the least weird thing in this movie, which is not a usual thing, I would say.
Yeah.
He was like the most normal in this movie.
Well, I mean, so Sophia Boutella in this, I think she's great in everything too. I mean, you and I know her mostly from Climax, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've seen her in some really fucked up weird movies.
Yeah.
And so this was like nothing. She was pretty, you know, everything around her was pretty normal in this. But
what do you think of that part where she says something and then she asked, like, it's a reaction shot on her while Nick Cage is giving his radioactive speech, and she's just like,
I am radioactive. sorry, go
like,
ahead.
How do you be an actress and just like listen to that and not invoke any emotion at all? She was just staring at him.
To do.
I know.
That's her job.
There's no way. Like you, like we said last week, dude, or 2 weeks ago, there's no way
she
we
had
would,
AirPods in and wasn't listening.
I'm saying there's no way we could be in a Nick Cage film.
Oh, God, no.
And not be just fangirls.
Yeah.
Losing our shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's Nick Cage.
Oh, fuck. Well, moving on.
Yeah, what a movie.
That was weird and something. So if you like weird and something,
go check out
Prisoners of Ghostland.
Prisoners of the Ghostland.
Prisoners of the Ghostland.
There you go. You're going to get on my shit for saying it wrong. You don't even say the fucking word. The
Wednesday. It Comes at Night.
Nothing came.
No, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Secure within a desolate home, as an unnatural threat terrorizes the world, the tenuous domestic order he has established with his wife and son is put to the ultimate test with the arrival of a desperate young family seeking refuge. Despite the best intentions of both families, paranoia and mistrust boil over as the horrors outside creep ever closer, awakening something hidden and monstrous within him as he learns that the protection of his family comes at the cost of his soul. So you say that. So what did you think of this movie?
This movie has challenged me all week, Scott.
Really?
Because I wanted to like it.
Really?
And I didn't.
Really?
I am with the vast majority of people who do not like this film. Except my gripes with it are not the same as theirs.
Okay.
Because, again, I think a lot of people had a misconstrued idea as to what this movie was based off of the trailer.
Okay.
Going back to earlier, I never saw the trailer.
I feel like I've watched the trailer in the past because this is another movie that's been on my list for a long time and I kind of forgot about it. But I don't remember the trailer, so I don't know what expectation that put into people's
minds.
Well,
I went and watched the trailer afterward.
Okay.
Because again...
So you agree? You understand?
I understand where they're coming from. The trailer very much makes it aware that there is something, some sort of creature or monster that is... Like, even
coming.
Maybe zombies, right?
Sure.
Something is apparent here. So, like, there's, again, this big buildup waiting for something to happen, and then it never does, which I was fine with. I think, and the title, too, people, again, were like, it comes at night, but it never came. Again, irrelevant to me, but I understand where people were coming from was, if you're going into this mindset of... There's some sort of creature, something, it, right, is coming at night. Why, like...
So it sounds like the synopsis does a better job of telling you what the movie's about than the trailer did.
Yes, I think so. And maybe it was written after they got feedback on the trailer. I don't know. I guess my problem with it is this is an A24 film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of other A24 films like Hereditary, Uncut Gems, The Witch. I thought the suspense and the payoffs were better in those films.
Okay.
The tension was built well in this, but I don't think it led to anything. Like, the only time I felt like any sort of stress or tension was anytime it was like revolving the kid. Like, that's just anytime kids are at risk of being hurt or harmed, right?
That's good. You're a teacher, so
yeah,
you should feel
like,
that way.
I was just like, that's what made me like uncomfortable, right? But
sure.
I don't know. I just I just feel there's better psychological thrillers, and this didn't do it for me. And that's not to speak away from the rest of the film, because I thought the acting was incredible in this movie. The cinematography was pretty damn good. I don't know. It's a weird thing for me that, like I said, it's challenged me all week that I've wanted to like it, and I can't. Every time I think back, I'm just like, it wasn't great. But I think you probably have a different take on it.
I really like this movie, and I think I understand. This is one of those that I have referred to in the past that I would say is an experience movie. It's not about what's coming. And that's what I feel like people were misled to, whether it be the trailer or whatever, were misled to believe that this was not just a movie about these two families, these interactions of these characters, and the mistrust in the situation that they're in. It's not about the situation that's happening in the world. It's about their situation that's happening right now, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never important what was coming at night. It was all, and like I said, that's where I understand if you're going to see the movie and it's called It Comes at Night, and you know, classically, you want to know what the fuck's coming and you want to know what's going on, sure, whatever. But I don't know what it was, but I watched this at 4 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't sleep. I've been having a rough time sleeping. That hasn't helped.
Were you worried that it was coming at night for you?
It was night, so I just was worried it was coming, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, while it's not a scary movie exactly, I do think it helped the ambience. I was, you know, alone in the dark, bundled up on a couch, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I definitely think that was one of the biggest things with this movie was the ambience. And it relied a lot on that, you know? And so I mean, if you look into the story or you expect something crazy to happen, you're going to be disappointed, which is like we're talking about. That's what a lot of the reviews I saw, that's mm-hmm. what you know, you kind of said, the views of others that we've seen. But I don't know. I didn't feel that way. I think I've got a pretty good handle on going into A24 movies without expectation.
Well, like I said, I went in with no expectations. I could care less what the title of this film was. I didn't see the trailer, so I didn't have any preconceived notions as to what to expect from it. It just, I just felt nothing really happened. And I get it, you're building on this sense of paranoia.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the monster that's at bay in this film.
I mean, what happened is he killed the other family. Like, if you're waiting for the big finale and that the fucked up thing to happen is this whatever's coming at night or this virus or whatever, it wasn't that. It was the fact that he,
yeah, your psychological state of mind put him in a state that,
yeah,
you know, in any other situation you would openly have these people in your home, you know, they're down on their luck, we're gonna help them out, if they want to leave that's fine, but there's this bigger picture at large of you are afraid that your family is at risk,
yeah,
because they know where you live, or they're going to come back and break in and steal your shit or whatever. And yeah, I get the premise of it. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. And I wanted to like it. And
yeah.
I was watching it and I was just, I don't know. I couldn't get into it.
Well, it is what it is. But you mentioned the acting, which I agree was phenomenal. The young guy from Possessor,
mm-hmm.
Christopher Abbott, was in this.
Yeah.
He was great in this, too. Everybody in this was...
Yeah, I think Joel Edgerton
was
one of my favorite roles of him,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't like the movie. I thought he did an excellent job. I couldn't buy that Kelvin Harris Jr. was a 17-year-old kid, but...
How old is he in real life?
I think at the time of this recording, he was like 23 or 24.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, 17 was pushing it, but... I played along. I don't know. I think possibly The Green Knight may have prepared me for this a little, because I lately, occasionally I'll think about it. And The Green Knight is another A24 movie. We saw it earlier this year,
yeah.
And in theaters, and it was, we had some interesting conversation after it. because it felt like nothing happened. So it sounds, though it wasn't exactly like this movie, on paper it had similarities in that sense of it felt like it was building to maybe what never happened. And so I think I've kind of adopted this kind of enjoying the journey because I don't know where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant by no expectations, is not expecting what the movie's going to be like or about or anything, but just kind of not trying to anticipate where it's going, because that was another thing that, and I'm not saying I successfully do it ever, because I think that's what was interesting about Lamb last week too, was I did that, right? I fell into that where I expected what was going to happen next. And I, you know, was trying to beat the movie kind mm-hmm. of thing, instead of just allow it to be it and absorb that kind of thing. And so I don't know if that was because it was 4 a.m. and I was half, you know, like, I mean, I was awake. I wasn't asleep for it or anything, but I wasn't amped, you know. I was just sitting by myself. I had nothing else to do. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to watch today's movie because I can't sleep. So let's go. And I don't know. Maybe that helped.
And again, I think we've mentioned it, and maybe I should just start a list, but this would be a film that I would be willing to rewatch. And I think kind of, again, knowing the outcome, knowing where the story heads, which I guess I kind of had guessed anyways, maybe, that everyone was going to die anyways. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe just approach it from a different angle now that I have seen it and I have a preconceived notion of it. Maybe it could change my mind. It just sucks that it, you know, it won't be for like 7 or 8 months before I even get to, you know, trying to rewatch this movie.
Yeah, we got so many movies that I have on my list that I would like to rewatch at some point, but you know,
you just can't.
You write that off right now because we got many, many weeks left.
But no, I kind of came into this movie, into this podcast today, thinking we were going to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think I am with you most of the times on things. And like I said, I really wanted to like it. So I was like, Scott probably enjoyed this. But this movie is great compared to our next movie. So our Thursday film was The Curse of La Llorona.
The Curse of La Llorona.
My Llorona, yeah, Llorona, banana, 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 yeah. Okay. So, ignoring the eerie warning of a troubled mother suspected of child endangerment, a social worker and her own small kids are soon drawn into frightening supernatural realm. Their only hope to survive La Llorona's deadly wrath may be a disillusioned priest and the mysticism he practices to keep evil at bay on the fringes where fear and faith collide. Holy jinkies, it's Velma, and she broke off from the gang to investigate for Child Protective Services when she stumbles upon a new mystery, the curse of La Llorona. And of course she's watching Scooby-Doo in the film. I mean, why wouldn't she be?
Yeah, I thought that was a real subtle joke.
Yeah.
No, that was pretty good.
But this movie sucks.
To be completely honest, in a week or two, if you ask me if I've seen this movie, I would probably say no.
You won't admit to watching it?
No, I won't have remembered that I watched it.
Oh, okay.
So much like The Nun, which I think I've mentioned before, which just tells me I've seen at least twice, but I have very little recollection of it. I don't know why. I don't remember not liking it or thinking it was like really bad.
Yeah.
It was generic.
Yeah.
I don't think it was necessarily bad. It wasn't good. It wasn't anything. It just was.
I think you're on the right track of saying it was pretty forgettable though. Because again, nothing stood out. I guess good or bad, right? It was just a bland ass movie.
Yeah.
Be a normal guy. Yeah. Eat a Snickers.
Yeah. I mean, it's just very hard for me to remember
so
what's going on.
I think I might have built this up a little bit more. Because a little backstory is my mom grew up learning about La Llorona.
Okay, cool. Okay?
Kind of like folklore, you know, stories that kids tell each other. Like for us, I think it was Bloody Mary was the big one when at least I was a kid. But kids grew up afraid of this myth of La Llorona.
Yeah.
And she's like fully invested into the superstitions around this. Like if she is in a car and she's driving under a bridge, she will lift her feet up because one of the legends say that La Llorona will rip you from your car under a bridge if your feet are touching the ground. So even as an adult woman, she will
really,
she will pick her feet up under a bridge.
No shit.
So like, I guess I kind of was like, all right, this sounds kind of cool. Like I'm all about this.
See, with more attachment, I could see this being a super letdown.
And then we just got into it and it just, it wasn't great. There, I mean, the story's fine.
Yeah.
But it was bad. And
I think they could have gone into it more because this is, like you say, that's one of my, something I researched, which thank God I did some research while it was still fresh because I don't fucking remember that shit. But like, this is real Mexican folklore. It's been around since like conquistador times, yeah. Apparently. So, I mean, that's really cool. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, like I said, it seemed like
I would have been super pumped to watch this if I knew that beforehand.
I was already, and then it just, I don't know. I think what threw me out of it the most was just the figure of La Llorona in general. Like there was times where she almost hit that frightening creep level, but then you just showed her and it was almost laughable looking at her. Like she's just,
that's the one.
And
thing
like they would hold the shot on her and it was just like,
with all scary, like jump scary, these generic types of horror movies these days, that fucking scream. Like there's a movie called Apostle, I think, on Netflix, came out a few years ago. And this is where I sat and thought about this for a long time. So this is why I know this now. And I know to expect it. And I know not to get angry at it anymore because it's not worth it. But that fucking scream is so stupid, not scary, annoying, and useless. And I, like you said, almost comical.
Yeah.
When they do it. And the elongated face and the, like, give it a fucking rest.
And I think that's just like, that was the part for me because, again, knowing how superstitious my mom is even around all of this, and then to see that in the film, I was like,
stupid.
You're ruining the entire fear around this person. And I don't know, it was stupid. You're right. It was dumb. It wasn't, like I said, it was comical. And
I know, and I'm curious too, because Annabelle and the stories of Ed and Lorraine Warren, this is a Conjuring universe movie, if we hadn't mentioned that already. And so like those are based on real stuff too. And that's how I feel about, I mean, Annabelle, at least they left, like the doll is just a side effect.
Yeah.
And then you see the spirit thing. So it's kind of, there's a little bit of a disconnect there. But when this is, the whole thing is her figure and she needs to be terrifying or creepy or whatever you know want to evoke with it.
Like I almost feel like not having her be present would have been so much more impactful than how they approached it.
It almost like belittles the actual fear, because
like
of
even in the pool
story.
Scene where the daughter's drowning and Velma jumps in to save her, I'm gonna keep calling her Velma.
That's
I don't
fine,
care
dude. Go for it.
Like
that's the first thing everyone said when they started watching this movie was, oh look, Velma.
But it's all foggy. You only have the spotlight of the flashlight under there. That was kind of like, I would say the scariest moment of this film, until the light pans over and then there's La Llorona and she's screaming underwater and she's, and then it's just, you ruin that entire scene.
They do some interesting visual things to, you know, like classic horror movie things where you're restricting vision and you're, you know, but they never fail to ruin any suspense for a cheap jump scare that's built entirely on surprise and loud noises.
Yeah.
And I can't stand that because it's so cheap and so shitty and ineffective for the overall movie, right? I mean, if you just want people to jump in their chair, because I was watching it with Jess, and this is, well, we've talked about this with the horror movies. I've conditioned myself to know when, you know, like I've seen so many of them. So I didn't jump once. I was just fucking annoyed.
Yeah, it was dumb.
Now it's all coming back to me now watching this movie.
But, and I don't even...
But like Jess jumped and that's...
Okay. I was going to say, it didn't even seem like it was impactful as other horror movies that have that mentality.
But that's the thing,
seems
it's
like,
all a surprise. It has nothing to do with the actual event happening or what's going on.
I know.
It's just a, I wasn't expecting that.
And I know I'm going to get hate on this comment.
Uh-oh.
But I have to say it. And I think the more Conjuring Universe movies that I watch, the more I tend to dislike the Conjuring franchise.
And that's, I agree, but that's because we are watching all of the ones on the outside.
And not right? the actual...
Like The Conjuring 2, I guess The Conjuring 3. I didn't love it, but it wasn't the worst thing ever. I really don't remember it, to be honest. But like, The Conjuring 1 and 2 were, they're fine. And so it just feels like they're trying to do that, base these off of real stories kind of thing. So they pull some folklore that they're like, yeah, we can make a story around that. We could put it all similar. I don't know how much effort they put into actually trying to tie these in. And that's one thing I didn't do with this one that at least we were able to do with all the other ones is, aside from, I think, the priest, the actual priest, and then the guy who helped, I think he's in other... I think they both have appeared in other
films,
Conjuring movies. But like, that's the extent of the connection from what I saw.
I mean, and they mentioned it in this movie that I know of somebody, but we didn't have the budget to pay for them, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren to come to your...
But did they mention them at all? Is that what they were talking about?
I think they were kind of referencing, because she goes to the priest to help and he's like, oh, I know of some people who can do this, but you know, they're busy for a few weeks. They can't get out here. And I
thought
that was
the church. I thought he was talking about the church.
Oh, I took it as Ed and Lorraine Warren.
I don't remember. But wasn't either way. Yeah. I don't know. It was.
And then I think the last thing, at least with this, and it's kind of funny, but this movie was so predictable. And an example was at the ending scene of the film, they're in the attic. And Tuco from Breaking Bad slides over the cross to Velma. And I immediately say, stab it through her fucking chest. At which point, pretty much on command, she does. Mm-hmm. And Kristen was watching this with me. And she turned to me and she goes, how'd you know that was going to happen? And I was like, because this movie's fucking stupid. Of course she's going to stab the
Kristen doesn't watch a lot of horror movies, does she?
Through her chest. Of course.
Nothing else was ever going to happen.
This is going to be...
It wasn't in the cards.
It's going to end between you and me.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Kind of like when Harry Potter jumps off a fucking side of the castle with Voldemort. He's like, oh, we're going to start this the way... Or end it the way we started it.
Did they say that?
Together. Yeah,
I don't remember the last two movies at all.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think what intrigued me about this was the actual fear and superstitions around... you know, the curse and everything. And it's just, it didn't live up to it at all. And it just, it kind of made me upset because yeah. I wanted it to be so much more just, but it is what it is. And I think that just has to be my phrase moving forward. I can't,
one of our catchphrases.
You know, I can't do anything about it. I can't change it.
Yeah. It am be what it am be.
That's it.
But we turned it the fuck around.
Yeah. Friday.
In what is accidentally a very long movie. And so maybe a little sneak peek into the minds of us and what we have coming, or we have planned for future episodes that we may theme, despite how we talk about hating theming stuff.
It's not bad.
No. They've been fun recently. We did some good ones. The Halloween one to start out was not what we expected, I guess, and the Christmas one was Christmas, so whatever. But but Nick Cage week was fucking great. 2021 week was pretty solid too.
Nick Cage 2 week will be really good.
Nick Cage. That might be a thing. We have that's why I showed him Prisoners of the Ghostland, was because I was like, dude, I found another movie that we need to add to our like potential Nick Cage 2 week. Or Nick Cage week 2, whatever. And he's like, no, I can't wait. We're doing that this week. Put it on Tuesday. But this movie was supposed to go in what may be a longest week ever week that we kind of thought about having, where we have on our list a handful of movies that are really fucking long, like over 3 hours. And this was supposed to be one of those. This wasn't that long. This was 2 hours and 40 something minutes, I believe.
2 hours, 41 movie. Ugh. 41
two
movies.
Hours and 41
2 hours and 41 movies. No, it was 2 hours, 41 minutes, which is essentially bridging the gap. And I would say watching it, it felt like a 3.5 hour long movie.
It did have a lot in it. Yeah. But I threw this on the list because I saw it and I've been wanting to see it, and I just was flipping through Hulu and I was like, fuck it, I'm putting that on this week, and forgot that I had a whole plan for
the long movies.
For having this in the week of long movies. So we watched a long ass movie. Silence. In the 17th century, two Portuguese Jesuit priests traveled to Japan in an attempt to locate their mentor, who was rumored to have committed apostasy and to propagate Catholicism. Or, if you want the really long version, intent on investigating the truth behind Father Cristóvão Ferreira. Intent on investigating the truth behind Father Ferreira's abrupt end of correspondence, the devout Portuguese Catholic priests Sebastião Rodrigues and Francisco Garupe set off to Japan in 1633. In great disbelief as the rumors of Ferreira's apostasy still echo in their minds, the zealous Jesuit missionaries try to locate their mentor amid the bloodshed of the violent anti-Christian purges. Under those circumstances, the two men and the Japanese guide Kojichiro arrive in Japan only to witness
Kijichiro.
Fucking shitballs. Under those circumstances, the two men and the Japanese guide Kijichiro arrive in Japan only to witness firsthand the unbearable burden of those who have a different belief in a land founded on tradition. Now, as the powerful Grand Inquisitor Inoue?
I'm laughing my ass off right now because this is like a 10-minute long synopsis.
Now, as the powerful Grand Inquisitor Inoue performs hideous tortures on the brave Japanese Christians, Father Rodriguez will soon have to put his faith to the ultimate test, renounce it in exchange for the prisoners' lives. There, in the ends of the world, a subtle change has begun. However, why is God's silence so deafening?
End scene.
I read the long one because I think it's a good movie. I think you should watch it. But I don't know if I have much to say on it, or either of us. I think it's going to be a hard one to talk much about. But this is a Martin Scorsese-directed movie with Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver and Liam Neeson.
Yeah. So my first comment on this was, wow, this was a lot of movie.
It was a lot of movie.
And to be honest with you, I didn't even know it existed. However, this was pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
And I think when I saw that Liam Neeson was in it, I had like preconceived notions as to what it was going to be.
Okay.
But I definitely didn't get the Taken movies that I had expected.
Oh, this
it to
was
become.
Not a Liam Neeson movie.
No. He was not in the slightest. He was in it. Yes. But it was not a Liam Neeson movie. But he's on the cover or the poster of it.
Yeah.
So again, I was like, oh, okay. I just, we're getting into it. But I was pleasantly surprised because number one, like this movie was shot beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew really Garfield was an excellent lead in mm-hmm. this movie. And I don't know, it was just great storytelling. This I would consider to be an experience movie. We talked about it earlier. I think this was the experience movie for me this week.
Sure.
If I had to call it anything, just because again, there's just a lot going on.
It was filmed by way of the grand adventure, a little bit.
And you're following these priests as they're going to Nagasaki and
getting an incision behind their ear and hung upside down for extended periods of time so that they don't die quickly, at least from the blood flow to their head, because it's draining out of the incision that they made in their ear. That's some fucked up torture shit.
Dude, all of the torture scenes in this, like the boiling hot water that has the holes in the ladle that they just slowly pour it on so that it's not one intense burn. It's a very slow progression of burn.
And that one guy they put on the out on the cross, it took him like 4 days to die. They were all standing there watching him die for 4 days.
Yeah. Or the dude's family that got lit on fire because they didn't renounce their faith. So he had to watch them get burned alive. And he even mentions, he's like, I can still hear their screams and smell their flesh like in my dreams. And this was a lot of movie.
Yeah.
And again, I don't, I'm with you. I don't really have a lot to say on it outside of, well, and like, it was just a good movie.
Yeah.
And
the story is based on a 1966 novel by Shusaka Endo. And
that's based off historical events though, right? Based off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how much was really what was true, right? What was based on. I'm assuming the apostatized priests were the main kind of driver of this, right?
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it really was an interesting story, and these, if these priests were real, the two where they end up, I don't know. I don't even know if it's a movie that you can ruin if you like say what happens, but it is a really good movie, and I think it's worth watching.
Well, I think even in the synopsis, the long one you read, right? You know, Father Rodriguez will soon have to put his faith to the renounce it in exchange for the prisoners' lives.
Yeah.
But then we find out he actually didn't renounce it.
Yeah. But I mean, they do look at some interesting stuff of like, he sees his quest. He sees what was, I don't remember what, if it was an apostle or if Jesus himself, he kept seeing his reflection.
And like the water and stuff. And like
that was justifying his, you know.
No,
but in the end, he realized that the, you know, his faith was his faith and whatever he had to do to.
Well, it's an interesting look on things, right? Because I think as he got further into the movie, like Andrew Garfield's character might have even questioned his own faith.
Sure, sure.
You know, because of just how could God let something as bad as this happen upon Earth? And,
yeah.
You know, how can you, you know, victimize your believers and have them tortured and all of this? But
well, you have that great scene where Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver are the two. Their Father Rodriguez and Garupe. And that's the kind of the contrast between the two is Garupe is like unwavering and by the book and is, you know, he's not looking to learn about the land or do anything. He's like, we're here to find Ferreira or whatever. And Rodriguez, Andrew Garfield, is more there, you know, on a mission, on a
I feel like he learns mission. More he wants through... to help. Yeah, through
he's actually trying everything. To learn the people and the land and help. And
I think and that so helps with his growth, though,
yeah,
throughout the
yeah.
film, because he starts to understand that he is there for a purpose and, you know, God yeah. does have a plan for him. And
well, and that's what that scene that I was thinking was when they come to the town and they're going to take the guys or they kill the whole village if somebody didn't fess up, right? Yep. And so they're talking about it and they ask him, they're asking the two priests, what do we do if they ask us to step on that was the whole thing was to renounce their faith. They had to step on a metal plate with Jesus
imprinted on it.
And so that's what one of them asks. He's like, what do? We can't step on. And Garupe, Adam Driver's like, no, you can't do it. And Andrew Garfield grabs him and he's like, you know, you fucking do it. He's like, you do it, live, you know, live for your family and your village. And so like, that's kind of the contrast between the two and his growth is kind of.
But then he's challenged again, because immediately after that, they all pass that test, but they're like, well,
and it didn't matter.
Now you have to spit on the cross and call.
And none of them did it.
Yeah.
Except for Kijichiro, which is a very interesting character in this too.
Yeah. They build a lot of depth with him in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting thing that just how many characters they explore and flesh out in this film. But mm-hmm. I guess they have the time, right? 2 hours and 41 movies. God, why are you saying movies? 2 hours and 41 minutes. Man, I've been watching too like, many
two
movies.
2 hours and 41 movies.
Woo. I'm happy, though, that we had more of a discussion than I thought we would. Just because this was the one I felt was going to be the most challenging for me to talk about, just because of it's more of a historical piece, but also just you can't really talk about plot points too much because it's just such a good story that you like without going into everything, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to take pieces and fit them into the bigger picture of the movie because the movie's about. The bigger picture.
About the
it's
bigger
kind of
picture,
the whole,
yeah.
But it is kind of a journey story for Andrew Garfield. Like it is that kind of grand journey, grand adventure kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah. I really like Andrew Garfield.
I do too. He's really grown on me in the last few weeks.
Can't say it if they haven't heard that episode or seen the movie. But
what?
If you haven't seen Spider-Man.
Oh, well.
He's in Spider-Man.
I think we're far enough out now where it's okay to say he was in Spider-Man. He wasn't, though, just in case. Whatever, man.
But speaking of other actors that have started to grow on me a lot, Adam Driver.
Adam Driver.
So jumping into Saturday.
The man who killed Don Quixote.
Yes. So Toby, a cynical but supposedly genius film director, finds himself trapped in the outrageous delusions of an old Spanish shoemaker who believes himself to be Don Quixote. In the course of their comic and increasingly surreal adventures, Toby is forced to confront the tragic repercussions of a film he made in his idealistic youth, a film that changed the hopes and dreams of a small Spanish village forever. Can Toby make amends and regain his humanity? Can Don Quixote survive his madness and imminent death? Or will love conquer all?
What do you think of this movie?
I think this might have been my favorite of the week.
This is pretty great.
I fucking love this movie.
It's pretty great. I really enjoyed this. Adam Driver is great.
Yeah, like I said, the more I see him in movies, the more I'm like really liking him. Yeah. And like obviously, the first thing I really saw him in was Star Wars. And not saying he did a bad job as Kylo Ren. And
it's just a very different role than most of his other things roles we've seen recently. Yeah.
And then if you bring in his SNL Kylo Ren, so then I really like Adam Driver. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's allowed to
have some fun.
Yeah.
Between him and Jonathan Pryce, oh my God, they had such good chemistry in this film.
They really did.
And after watching it, I just kept thinking to myself, man, I really wish I knew more about the novel.
Yeah.
I really wish I...
Yeah, I knew the story.
Knew the story of Don Quixote.
The Adventures of Don Quixote, yeah.
El Mancha, yeah.
Yeah, de la Mancha. Yeah, this, I mean, I laughed, I cried, I pissed my pants.
A lot of emotions in this movie.
A lot of emotions. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was super fun. I loved everyone in it. I mean, the story was fun. Acting was fantastic. The whole myth around like Don Quixote being intertwined in reality and fiction was a little fun playoff, which I guess the novel kind of does from my understanding.
Oh, really?
But I think what made it great to me was just there was so much more than just a fun film on the surface level. Like there's things you could interpret about this film if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Because you don't really know what to believe while you're watching this. Like, is Don Quixote actually
They transition a lot to dreams into even just while you're watching the movie when things are happening, you don't know.
And then
they do a good job of...
Yeah, trying to make you double...
Is this happening?
A double take of like, is this normal life? Is this just a fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. But no, it was kind of crazy because like at the time of all of this, there's this big festival going on that brings in these like characters that make appearances in the dream and reality, and you don't know what's going on. Don Quixote is supposedly a man that can never die, but essentially he's just reborn over and over again, and he envisions things as not what they seem like in the real world, but in his eyes, might be this
giant,
60-foot giant. Yeah.
But that's the whole thing they're playing off of because Adam Driver's a director and he's there shooting a vodka commercial.
Yeah.
Don Quixote fighting, thinking it's a giant, but it's a windmill, and he gets picked up and they bring that back quite a few times. And this movie has an interesting history as well. Okay. I don't know if you...
Go ahead.
Okay. So, Terry Gilliam, the writer and director, tried to have this movie made over the course of 29 years.
Yeah.
He started in... Here's the story. Here's the scoop.
I did read the... It was in production for a long time.
Yes. So, here's the full what the hell happened. So, he started in 1989 to try and get this movie made. He wasn't able to get funding until 1998. Started shooting in 2000 with John Rochefort as Don Quixote and Johnny Depp as Toby. Then it stopped due to a number of things, including flooding, destroying sets, and Rochefort getting sick, and general financial problems, and it was canceled. And then a documentary came out in 2002 that was supposed to be the making of, but obviously it didn't.
The making of a movie that didn't.
The movie never ended up getting made. So then he tried again to make it a number of times between 2003 and 2016 with Johnny Depp still as Toby and a slew of other big name actors as Quixote, including John Hurt, which is why at the end of the movie you see, I think it says for John Rochefort and John for John Hurt.
Yeah.
Who passed away before this movie was able to be finally released. And then finally in 2017, with the current cast, this movie was made.
What a story.
So crazy. But
so was the movie. Production. The movie was a story.
But it really, yeah, it was another grand adventure kind of.
Yeah, I
kind of
got like Monty Python vibes, Princess Bride.
Yep.
Even.
Like a quest.
Black Knight from like the Martin Lawrence movie Martin where Lawrence. He goes back in time, right? That was kind of like that fun style of reality fun, and fiction all mashup. Intertwining yeah. And. That was just fun. It was just it was a good movie. But no, I don't think there's again a lot to really say about it because it's just
it speaks for itself.
And yeah, I think most people. Okay, I can't speak for most people.
It's hard. Because
I'd want to say a lot of people would like this movie, but then again, maybe they wouldn't. I don't know.
Like, it seems like a very likable movie.
And at first, like when I was watching, I don't know if like you had this, but I had no idea what was happening. Like at first, and then like things started to kind of unravel and open up.
It does kind of give you more, reveal more of the story.
And then I was like, fully sold on everything, and I was just along for an adventure, for a quest.
Yeah,
a quest for Gore too.
Well, yeah, and like we said, they're just like we said, they transition between reality and fiction so seamlessly so many times, like this, like the Moroccans, like how that that old scene where they find him and he's dreaming, but it's just like, I don't know, the inclusion of all these people in the real world, but they're actually in the story, but they're
and then it also kind of plays into like the tale of them, like Pancho, who, you know, saved the kingdom when he had a bucket on his head. And like that actually happened in real life, I think, but then it was also being told as a story and it was hard to distinguish. Like,
yeah, it was just so.
What the hell was real life? And I don't know. It was cool. It was a good one.
It was.
How'd you interpret the ending? Do you feel Adam Driver?
I don't know.
Became Don Quixote?
I
loved him fighting the windmill. That was fucking hilarious.
That was really great. Come full circle.
Yeah.
From the start of directing that.
Because you don't see the other side of it. You just see him fighting a windmill.
Yeah, you never see the actual giant.
And then later you see the giant and then it cuts back to the fucking windmill and you're just
picking him up and slicing at him. And
it's so good.
It's really great.
And his woman is now Pancho.
Yeah, Sancho.
Sancho. Sancho Panza, right?
Sancho Panza.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty, I don't know. It's just a fun.
I liked it.
It was great. There's really nothing in it that I didn't like. Him going back to the town was all, you know, the angle of his coming back after so many years of, you know, having done this student film kind of thing and
seeing the destruction he put on everybody. Yeah. And how all of the people there like embrace Don Quixote's
they just let him fantasies. Do his thing. He's when he finds him, he's actually trapped.
Yeah.
Like in this shed for a, like a tourist attraction of Don Quixote.
Oh, you want to see Don Quixote? Okay, pay up.
Yeah, it's crazy shit. Skarsgård, he was great. Stellan Skarsgård was hilarious in it. And Olga Kurylenko, like everybody in it, so even side characters were just however sleazy. The gypsy guy was great. Everything was just great.
I have just a misunderstanding.
I don't have much more to say. I would recommend it.
It is recommended by Scott.
1 out of 1 recommendations. 1 out of 1 foam cups. I'm trying to pick a random rating system. I give it 2 out of 2 coffee mugs.
Yeah, I like that. Coffee mugs.
But Sunday.
Sunday
we watched Encanto. Encanto tells the tale of an extraordinary family, the Madrigals, who live hidden in the mountains of Colombia in a magical house in a vibrant town in a wondrous, charmed place called an Encanto. The magic of the Encanto has blessed every child in the family with a unique gift, from super strength to the power to heal. Every child except one, Mirabel. But when she discovers that the magic surrounding the Encanto is in danger, Mirabel decides that she, the only ordinary Madrigal, might just be her exceptional family's last hope.
Fucking Disney, man.
So what?
They did it again. Okay. I love this fucking movie.
Really? So I've been hearing a lot of people talk about this recently and how this is saying this is Disney's best, and that it's...
I wouldn't put it up for Disney's best.
It's but just yes. Fantastic, wonderful, the greatest movie ever. And I gotta be honest, I just thought it was all right.
See, I thought it was excellent. It was warm-hearted, real feel-good movie. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, also, to be honest, since Disney switched to 3D animation, it's really hard to differentiate for me which is Disney and which is Disney Pixar. So if you're comparing this to...
Disney films versus Disney Pixar films.
Films versus Disney Pixar films, if you put a line between those two. Because I got to say, like, one of my favorites recently with Disney's name on it, because it's Pixar, is Coco. And this was no Coco
for me. A lot of people think they even took it to the next level of Coco.
Really?
In terms of understanding the culture of, like, Colombia.
Well, and I liked all of that.
I thought it was beautiful the way they illustrated, like, the characters of Colombia, the culture. I love that even though, like, there was a presence of magic, it felt grounded to me. Like, it didn't vastly go off the rails. I thought it was a nice change of pace that, like, the story didn't have to follow this long journey that we were talking about in the previous two films, right? Like, it always seems like our protagonist has to go on this long journey to learn something about themselves.
Well, when in reality, like, the whole movie was just set up. And then the last, 10 minutes of movie was shit actually happening and them saving things or whatever.
And I think I appreciated that because I think, you know, Mirabel as a person, right, she obviously doesn't have the powers that the rest of her family does, but she also has to, you know, wake up every day and accept that reality. And a lot of what she does as, like, the hero of the film is just addressing those things that the characters are too afraid to address themselves, where it's like, you don't have to be strong all the time. You don't have to be perfect all the time. You can be human, right? And I think that was the message, the overall thing that they're trying to present. And I thought, I don't know,
I just felt like it was maybe, it's a Disney movie. It's for kids, right? So it's not for me. And so I didn't expect it to be anything more than that, but it just felt like such a same old, you don't have to be special or I don't know, just one of those. And it was just kind of...
I think that's fine. I don't think everybody
I have to like it. Everyone loves this fucking... Everyone and their fucking dog loves this movie.
So...
Just kidding.
But, isn't that what the movie's trying to explain, Scott? Is that you don't have to live up to the expectations of everybody else. Just because they like it doesn't mean you have to. Okay? So
you're special for not being special.
Society puts the pressure on you to love all Disney movies, but you can be an exception. And that's what this movie's trying to tell you, Scott, is that...
Dude, Star Wars is a Disney movie now, and fuck that. So I do not live up to that. No, I don't know. I think expectations may have hurt this too, because if I was just expecting another Disney movie, fine. But you had mentioned people that you were hearing it from, how great it was. I've heard from so many people. It's like, oh, it's the greatest fucking movie ever. And it's like, no, it was kind of whatever. It was fine. The animation was fantastic.
Yeah.
The colors, the visually it was incredible.
Yeah.
I think another thing was I felt the songs were... I'm not a musical guy, right? So I think...
So you could actually... So one of the story writers in this was Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
Who...
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
and directed with the, his Hamilton.
Kind of the hip hop flair of things, yeah. And the
so you can definitely see his Broadway influence on this film. Absolutely, in terms of
all of the songs for sure.
And that I would
doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
I hear kids singing "We Don't Talk About Bruno" all the time. Like that is the new "Let It Go." Kids love this soundtrack. Students at my school love this soundtrack.
See,
Teachers love this soundtrack. Very catchy, and
I didn't find any of them like that. Like, I don't have anything. I have nothing stuck in my head. I didn't find any of the songs personally like.
See, I was only aware of that though because this would probably be our least traditional movie that we would probably ever watch.
Yeah.
Right. I'd say this is almost. I don't know. I'm trying to think back, but this might be the first like kids movie that we have watched on the podcast.
I don't remember. Yeah, maybe.
You know, something made
for children's.
For children's, yeah. Let's see. I'm going to see if I can find anything. I think, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
This is the closest, for sure. I mean, you could argue Ghostbusters. Oh, Jungle Cruise.
But no animated.
Yeah.
We haven't watched any animated movies for this yet.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. But, I mean, I don't know. I guess I just, like, I put Coco on randomly for background noise. Like, I really like Coco. I think Moana was great. I really enjoyed Moana. I think, what's the newest one? The Italian.
Oh, Luca.
Luca. I thought Luca was great.
Luca was really good too.
I ended up watching, yeah. But those are all Pixar. So I feel like maybe that's why I was expecting that. But, you know, ever since Disney stopped doing the drawn, like they all just kind of seem the same to me, so I'm expecting a Pixar. But like, if you're comparing this to Frozen, or Frozen 2, or Tangled, or I don't even know what else is just Disney.
The Lion King, Mulan. Well, no,
obviously
Tarzan.
Obviously
Hercules.
Those. I mean, in the last like decade, jackass. God. No shit, those are all just Disney. I'm
well,
talking
you were
about
wondering
the,
what
the 3D
was just
animation that makes it basically the same as Pixar, but Pixar movies are just better. Is how I feel. Oh my God. Yeah, and if you try and pull up a list, it's just all of the, yeah, I mean, of course, fucking Snow White. Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. Gosh. Jeez. Your filmography by decade. 2020s.
Just think of everything that's had a live action remake and then you'll know.
Well, yeah.
What was just Disney.
Yeah. See, I wish they would go back to drawing shit. I don't want live people. I don't want 3D animation. Pixar's got that covered. Why are you trying to compete in your own company? Pixar wins.
You can't say this film wasn't visually stunning.
No,
though.
It was, but they're just using all Pixar shit probably.
And why it's not if you animation. Fucking own them? Why would you not?
Why not just make one though? Why can't they all just be Pixar?
So
why
if this had if this it? Had a Pixar title on it.
If this had Pixar on it, I would like it even less because it's not as good as other Pixar movies. Not having the Pixar title
okay.
on it, I'm saying
really quick,
I might be not tangent.
What is your favorite Pixar movie?
I don't know, dude.
Coco?
Recently? Yeah, Coco. Okay. I watched Coco.
Better question.
A lot.
What is your least favorite?
Toy Story 3. 4. Is there a 4?
There's a 4.
I've never seen 4, so I'm going to say 4 because I don't care.
Okay. Do you want me to break your heart right now?
What?
Cars is the worst.
I liked Cars.
Cars is the worst Pixar movie. I disliked it so much that I haven't even seen 2 or 3 because that's how much I despise that
I
movie.
Haven't seen 3. I've heard 3 is actually
and
good.
And Encanto is glorious compared to Cars. Cars.
You can just throw Cars on right now. Like, I've seen that movie so many thousands of times
well,
because
yeah,
of my little brother
Gav
at the time.
It, yeah.
So, like, you know, I can't. I did.
You can't
I didn't.
Knock it. I know.
Still. I honestly don't understand why everyone hates Cars so much. It's not the best. It's not in the top whatever 20, 30, whatever Pixar movies.
There's 20 movies and it's not making the top 30. Yeah,
well,
I don't know how many movies. I agree with that.
I'm just saying, like, it's not really wasn't that bad. I don't know. I really don't get the Cars hate, to be honest. But that is, we have tangented so hard.
I think what saves this movie, and again, I really liked it. Just for being what it was. But I think this was a nice breath of fresh air. We have been on the horror, sci-fi, thriller.
Oh, for what we've watched?
We've watched a lot of shit.
It was nice to have a movie
and
that wasn't.
And it was nice that we were watching something that wasn't that.
Yeah, I just wish it was Coco.
And, just kidding. You know, my nephew will watch this movie.
Yeah. That's what
eight
I hear
times
a
day.
People,
you know,
with kids, they're, it's on constantly. And look,
I would be happy to sit down and like watch Frozen. This with him.
I'm happy that no one's singing "Let It Go" anymore.
We could bring it back.
Move on. But
that was a line in this movie. Someone said, "Let it go."
Let it go.
Yeah. They're self-aware.
Oh, see, there's that trend. They're making fun of their own movies. God, it's bleeding into everything. I don't know.
Either way,
man.
I thought it was a nice little end of the week. I thought it was, like you said, a breath of fresh air. Not saying we're going to watch a lot of kids' movies moving forward, but I'm sure there's probably...
Every time a new Pixar or Disney movie comes out, we'll probably end up watching it. It's not like we don't watch them, right? So that, I feel like that fits into what we're doing. It's a movie.
Yeah.
But we won't notice the same trends that we do with other movies because we're not watching them as often. Disney and Disney Pixar do not come out with movies on a weekly basis.
Just wait. Netflix
is monthly basis.
Netflix will start pushing them. Speaking of animated films on Netflix, I watched a movie in class today.
What'd you watch?
Mitchell versus the Machines.
Really? How did you win?
I didn't see the end.
Oh, no.
So it should have been a snow day today, but it wasn't. Kids elected not to come to school today.
Yeah.
So I'm had at most like 50% attendance in my classes. We decided to watch a movie. It was Mitchell versus the Machines. And it kind of had that Spider-Verse cartoon drawing vibe.
Oh, really?
But no, it was a really good movie. It was pretty much just like shitting on Apple. You have this giant tech company mogul that's, you know, kind of in control of the world. Everybody has their face plastered to their screens at all times, and then it becomes iRobot.
I feel like you're getting really, really punchy saying just Apple, because that's a lot of companies.
Yeah.
He says on his MacBook.
Okay.
Typing on his MacBook.
I'm not saying that I don't have Apple. What I'm trying to say is if you looked at the store that was inside the mall.
It was based on an Apple store.
It's fucking all glass, and it sits in the middle of the mall. And
like an iCarly or whatever.
Yeah. The Pear phone. This is way off tangent, but yeah. It was just...
I think we're done talking about the movie, so it's the outro. We can talk about whatever we want. Yeah, we got nothing else.
I don't have an outro, to be fair.
I think this is the first week that I'm excited to start another week. Which is weird because it wasn't like bad movies. I'm just like excited to watch other stuff. And I think we're starting to pick stuff that like we think is less complicated for our minds when we feel like we need it. So
no, I think
I'd be down to watch fucking Encanto every day for the rest of this week, to be honest. You need a fucking break.
Can you talk about it six times though?
No, I've said everything I have to say.
No, but I agree with that. I think from where we started to where we are now, not saying that we had trash movies. Oh, we had some bad movies, but I feel like we're starting to pick a better selection of movies, and we're also starting to be aware of our time, minus Silence, of course, because we were not prepared.
Yeah, I texted Mitch like end of the day because I knew he hadn't gotten around to it yet, and I pulled it up, and I was like, oh, fuck, this movie's 3 hours long.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, dude,
that's a lot at the end of the week.
Because I can swap it out with something else. He's like, no, I'm fine. I was like, ah, fuck. All right, here we go.
You could have just made the executive decision to be like,
well, I wanted to watch it.
Hey, we're not watching this today.
And I forgot that we had other plans for potentially watching it at a later time. But it's like, I want to watch this. Then we didn't have anything like, I don't know. We had Scream, Prisoners of Ghostland, It Comes at Night, Curse of La Llorona. Like, we didn't have any normal movies.
What is considered normal?
I don't
though?
Know. Like non-horror, A24, Nick Cage, meta horror. That's what we had leading up to Silence.
And anything owned by Disney.
It was nice to have a historical, you know, drama, a little Scorsese film, or a big Scorsese film.
Very big.
But
no, I think if anybody out there has suggestions for us in terms of potential theme weeks or even recommendations on films, we'd be
happy
to
Except for Steven, we're not doing Steven Seagal week.
I think he wanted Steven Seagal Sundays.
Yeah.
So not even in a week. He just wanted Steven Seagal Sundays.
Which there probably are enough Steven Seagal movies, but I don't know if I could do that. anyway, sorry, Steven.
Well, yeah, either way, check us out on Instagram and TikTok for all of our movies of the week. If you have suggestions on anything, you can email us at ndnmpodcast@gmail.com. And without further ado, catch you later, nerds.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Without further ado, let's find out who
is this week's killer.
You win a Starbucks gift card if you can name that callback right now. First caller. Oh, we're not on the radio. Sorry, guys. You lose. You know what movie I'm talking about? Without further... Here, let me help. Without further ado, let's find out who.
I have no idea.
Dude, it was that movie with the panda that killed everybody that you picked.
Funhouse,
yeah. You remember Funhouse's catchphrase?
I try not to remember Funhouse.
The only thing I remember is that catchphrase because I had to go, in editing, I had to go and find that in that movie to clip that because we talked about it. I couldn't remember what it was.
Sexual harassment.
As a soundbite.
Panda. Yeah. Goodbye, bye.